At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, today's Wednesday, August 23rd. I'm Gino. I'm here with Darren. And from a remote location is Kevin. And because, parts like some guests, he is from parts unknown, we are the
Just
Sports
Kings. George Animal Steel.
You can listen to us anywhere you get your podcast. Please like and subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Send us some posts, thoughts. Send us some questions. Darren wants to talk to you. Give us a listen. We're going to go through some sports tonight. It's another potpourri night as the doldrums of summer are here. The start of football is about 20 days away. This is the final calm before the storm of the NFL season. Let's get it going. And we're actually going to start it with some NFL. We're going to start it with the Jets. They were on Hard Knocks episode 3 last night. I'll go through some stuff from the show. You guys feel free to jump in, comment. We saw Mr. Saleh going through what makes a competitor. He went through the four stages. The guy seemed engaged. I don't know if that was just because they were on TV, but he went through it. It was interesting. The bottom was survivor. The second one was contender. The second one was competitor, and he kept stressing that he wants everybody to be a competitor. And then the top rung was a commander. We saw Dalvin Cook make an appearance at camp, although he was not in gear to practice yet. I expect we'll see that next week on next week's episode. But the fans were chanting his name after it was said that he was coming aboard. We saw Breece Hall come back. I got to tell you, I know he's coming back. Guys coming back from this injury year one is really tough. He's not been deactive basically for 12 straight months. So I don't know what we're going to get out of him. I think that's a big reason why Dalvin Cook's here. Things I found amusing on last night's episode was Nathaniel Hackett introducing himself to the running backs, to Breece Hall, because he hasn't seen them in a while. I thought that was interesting. Woody Johnson with the big silver chain that said Woody. I thought that was pretty funny.
That was bling.
Yeah, the bling. I thought Rodgers throwing balls to Garrett Wilson was just unbelievable. He was flinging them all over the place in practice. And then later on, you heard him talking to Mark Sanchez and to some of the other players from Tampa Bay regarding how good he thinks Wilson's going to be. I thought that was pretty funny.
Use the word
special. We saw a little bit with Randall Cobb and his kids. We saw a little bit with Damian Woody and Saleh talking about how they each have 7 kids. I thought that was pretty funny.
Damian Woody's kid looks like he could be an offensive lineman today. He's that big, that kid.
And we saw that Saleh's kid actually, in playing around with Rodgers, actually punched Rodgers in the face. You heard that story, which I thought was pretty funny. And then we saw Ibakanda in the exhibition game go down with a knee injury. Bonaconda? Izzy, that's right. Izzy Bonaconda, that's right. They did a little talk about Tanzel Small. You know what? I like it. I think they're doing a good job. I think they're just kind of all over the place. I don't see them, Kev, as in past years, them focusing on a lot of different people. They're kind of just focusing all over the map, and 50% of it is Rodgers, as we kind of expected. The only other thing I found interesting was at the end, Ralph Macchio was there. I thought that was pretty funny at the end, talking about Karate Kid and talking about an old karate guy telling him some stories, and I thought that was pretty funny. Any comments about Hard Knocks, guys?
I wish I could comment. Unfortunately, in the parts unknown I've been, we do not have HBO.
Okay.
So I've just been reading up on what's been going on in the training camp. But Darren, I know you've been.
I watched it yesterday. Interesting thing is, showing the leadership of Mosley and kind of really. Mosley seems to be the guy that talks most in that locker room, even though they haven't shown one thing happened yet with him on the field. The offensive line woes seem to be a very, very, brought up topic, so to speak, on this team. I'm not as nervous about the O-line as everybody else, simply because I've been saying it for 2 weeks, G. Becton at right tackle, there's no reason to waste everybody's time. He's the only one that can play it. Obviously, he has to stay healthy. And then Brown's off the pup list today to play left tackle. And now all of a sudden, you're really just going to try to figure out who the best three interior linemen are. It really comes down to Tomlinson, Tippmann, and McGovern, which two of those three are going to play interior. And that would be the big determining factor. The Garrett Wilson stuff, he looks amazing. All the scraps between them and the Bucks was pretty interesting. There are a lot of fights on the field. The rookies had to go again because they bombed the first time when they had to do the talent show. The kid Khan came out, and I believe Khan or Kane, I'm trying to remember, Kane maybe. The rookie, he came out and did a rap, and they all seemed to go nuts. It's entertaining. It's 100 hours of film, 99 if it goes on the floor. We get to see an hour of it. For me, I just want to see action. I'm ready for more than I have in years. I'm ready for the season to get underway because we're actually one of the hunted teams more so than the hunter for the first time in a long time, which is kind of interesting. Kev?
Hey, Kev, the other thing, yeah, Kev, because I know you didn't see it, Quinnen Williams in the joint practice was upset because Mike Evans called him fat, and they did a whole little skit about that with him, which was pretty funny too.
Oh, wow. And he went up to Mike Evans at the end. You call me fat? He goes, well, I call my own guys fat too. He goes, well, you're fast for a fat guy. It wasn't like he backed off on it. It was just very funny how that kind of happened. News today, by the way, Corey Davis retired. So the Jets, like you said in the beginning, G, the Dalvin Cook signing is for Breece Hall. Michael Carter didn't even play in the preseason game, so you figure they're just resting him up. And then Abanaconda looked really good, then he got hurt. So it's not as bad as originally thought, thank goodness. Knight did have a fumble, which cost them a little bit. So it's going to be interesting to see which four running backs stay with this team. Stars are finally going to play this week. Question for you guys. What are your thoughts on resting your starters the first 2 weeks of the preseason?
With the way the schedule for the preseason is now, where they have the week off now between the last preseason game, they take Labor Day weekend off and then come back a week later after that to play the first game. I think this is the perfect way of doing it. Let them play the third game. Unless there's a real big reason to play them in the first two games, I don't see, let's get them in there for the third game. Let's get, a couple of reps in there. Let's get some chemistry going. And then you've got the week off so that if anybody does get a little banged up, they have a little recovery time. And I think especially this year, I'm just ready to see Aaron Rodgers in green and white. I can't wait for Saturday's game.
So a couple of things, and that is, I know the QBs are all redshirted. I get it. But a lot of these joint practices seem to have taken over part of what the preseason exhibition games were.
Yep.
And I honestly think that's why we're seeing, it's not being reported. The only thing we're seeing is basically the Jets on Hard Knocks. But I can't imagine that all over the NFL that all of these joint practices are not chippy like we've seen.
Oh, they certainly are.
This is the place where these guys are actually hitting each other. I know they got the big helmets and the big protective helmets on, and I get it, but this is, to me, this is where you're seeing everybody, at least hit each other to some degree. Because once you get on the practice field, once you're on that in those exhibition games, one, you got third and fourth string players. If any of your starters play two sets, it's a lot right now. I mean, they're saying that you're going to see Rodgers against the Giants, right?
I want to see him for a quarter.
I don't even know if you're going to see him for a quarter, Kev. I mean,
I think unless they put together a 15-play touchdown drive the first time they have it, I think you're going to get at least two drives out of him. That's what
here's the point, though. The reason why I brought up the question, though. So, okay, the Chiefs always start off quickly, and they've played their starters in every single preseason game. In fact, they leave the starting offensive line in there a little longer so the backup quarterback gets used to it just in case. And they always start off quick. Now, I'm not saying that Patrick Mahomes isn't a good reason why that happens, but I feel like are the Jets – I sit back and remember Rich Kotite not playing Neil O'Donnell one snap in the preseason. You remember that, right? He was saving the secret weapon.
That was Neil freaking O'Donnell.
He was the golden child. Like, oh, my God, we finally have this ace. We don't want anyone to see anything from him. They went into Denver that first week. You and I watched it together, Kev.
Oh, yeah.
We got blown out. We went – I think – where were we? At Bright Fellows, I think. They got blown out like 38 to – 7 was, or something like that. It was awful. Went to Denver and got smoked. I just don't know if there's the right or wrong reason of play. Listen, I'm excited to see him play this week. I'm wondering if they should have went for a series last week too. That's really what my question is.
I could see that. I mean, the only thing is, I think looking at this week, I know Brown's not going to play. I think they've got at least they've settled right now and Becton at right tackle, and they should have 4/5 of their starting line in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, for that left tackle, it's Aaron Rodgers. He doesn't care about maybe hanging in there and making the play in preseason. If he feels any sort of pressure, I feel like Aaron Rodgers is going to throw it away. Yeah, all the credit to Zach for showing the hustle last week, but, you know, you're not going to see Rodgers stay in bounds and try to pick up the extra yards on a 35-yard run.
No, I agree.
So I'm not – I know, you know, as Jeff fans, we think back to Sanchez getting hurt against the Giants. We think back to Pennington getting hurt against the Giants. And
well, they wanted Sanchez to get hurt. That's why they did what they did. It was almost like he did it on purpose. Almost like he asked me what I wanted, and I said, let's get Sanchez hurt. That's kind of what happened.
I wish we would see – some of these guys play in the second preseason game, even if it's a quarter. I wish we would just so I feel like they need it. Again, even if it's what you're going to see with Rodgers, where, you know, any sign that he could get hit, he's gone. But just that way they're actually in the game. Like, I hate the fact that they'll go through three preseason games and, you know, play three snaps. So
I just think that
you need a little bit more continuity. I get it.
I have the feeling that Rodgers is going to play at least a quarter. I don't think it's just going to be a cameo. I think he's going to play, you know, at least two drives. So let's get two good drives out there.
Well, one thing Sala said on the show yesterday is like the Giant game. He goes, I want him to get used to this field and this crowd against the Giants because that's like a regular season game.
Yep.
That preseason game against the Giants has a feel of a regular season game, which is a true point for the fans. And, you know, it was interesting that the coach acknowledged that. So I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. All right. Any other Jet points before we move off?
Peter said that he would come out of retirement and come over and play tackle if needed for the Jets. I guess Jason Peters, if he's willing to come, if we have an injury, it's not a horrible backup. I mean, he's what, like 75 years old, but he can still probably block better than the other two tackles we have.
And we have about $10 million under the cap now freed up if Davis is retired. Yeah, that was Davis not guaranteed money, so.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. That's all I have for the Jets. It's going to be interesting to see how they go forward here.
All right. Around the NFL, Jonathan Taylor has gotten permission to seek a trade with some other teams. We'll see if anything happens with that.
Remember the last time a major running back made that kind of request? It was Trent Richardson, right? And it was like a big deal, and he was horrible.
Yeah.
You know, Alabama running back, you know, it was not a good move. I don't know how much people are going to be willing to pay for a running back.
I agree. I agree. I mean, you know, Ursay, right? Ursay.
Yep.
Came out and said that, you know, he thinks he's worth the first round pick, kind of just throwing it out there. So I don't think he's getting a first round pick at this point, but we'll see. The Raiders came out and said that they're not trading Josh Jacobs. The San Francisco 49ers named Sam Darnold their number two quarterback over Trey Lance today. And the other night, the Commanders of Washington ended the Baltimore Ravens exhibition win streak at 24. That's all I got for NFL, guys. Anything else?
A couple quick points. Chris Jones said he might sit out as far as week 8 for the Chiefs. Their defense is completely different if he's not playing. And the fact that he hasn't done anything at all this preseason means he'll be behind the 8 ball when the season starts. So that's a blow. That's a major blow for the Chiefs.
Yeah, that week 8 is strictly, I think, language in the contracts that if he comes back by week 8, this counts as a full season then. So
exactly.
So he gets that 1 year closer to unrestricted or whatever his status is.
Nope, absolutely. Baker Mayfield wins the job. He'll start week 1 for Tampa. Not that Trask looked bad the other day. And Howell wins the job in Washington. G, thoughts?
I like it. I think you're going to see a lot more than we think out of him.
I like Howell, so I liked him last year. I liked the kid. He had a tough senior year, but before that, or last year anyway, before that, he was tearing it up in college.
I was surprised to learn at how much he actually ran.
Oh, yeah.
And he's actually a really good runner, too.
He's Heinicke with an arm. I mean, he really is Tyler Heinicke, who was a nice player. He just didn't have any arm strength. This is a guy that can run it, but runs it the same way. You're going to like watching him play. He's got that little reckless abandon. He's just not that tall either. Another thing that hurts him a little bit.
But I was flipping around. I did see a little bit of that game the other night, and I thought he looked pretty good against the Ravens there.
I believe so as well.
The other game I did see this weekend, and just going back to the Jets for a second, since we were down here in Florida, I saw the Bucks version broadcast team doing the Bucks Jets game.
Rondé Barber
and Chris Myers.
Yeah.
And boy, if you're as a Jet fan, I hated it because I want to hear about the Jets. I didn't realize just how much when you're watching preseason football that you want your guys broadcasting the game because you want to hear about your third and fourth string guys out there fighting for a job. You don't care what Tampa's third and fourth string looks like.
Yeah, the sideline interviews are completely different. It's just about guys you don't really care about. I agree with you on that. It's not nearly as much fun. There's a lot, a lot of interesting storylines. We're going to be doing a football preview show in a couple of weeks before the season kicks off. So we'll give you our picks. We'll let you know what's going on. And next week, G and I will be involved in a little bit of a fantasy show as well. So we'll get our NFL in for you guys.
All right. Kev, what's going on in the world of golf?
This weekend is the Tour Championship. So after last weekend was the BMW.
Yep.
If I remember right. Victor Hovland shoots a 61 on Sunday. Of course, record to pull out that win. Scottie Scheffler finished second in the tournament. But going into this weekend now, it's the top 30 in the FedEx points. Scheffler leads it. And this weekend is where the scoring gets a little different, or very different. They stagger your starting value, your starting score, I should say. So Scottie Scheffler, before he tees off, is at 10 under. Victor Hovland, who finished second in the rankings, is at 8. Rory's at 7. Rahm is 6. Glover is 5. And then from there, you've got group at 4, group at 3, 2, 1, and the bottom 5 are started even par. So I think what they're trying to do is make it so that this is big money they're playing for. They're playing for like an $18 million bonus. And this is supposed to be the culmination of the entire year. So they're giving the advantage to the guy who has led the year and giving them, two stroke lead over the second place and up to a 10 stroke lead over the guys who just barely made the top 30. Scheffler was in the same position last year, and Rory outshot him. Scheffler shot a 73 in the final round last year to lose it. So we'll see if Scheffler can keep the two-shot lead this year and win it. Darren, who do you like?
You know, I mean,
and do you like this, and do you like this format?
I'm gonna go with Victor. I'm gonna go with Hovland. I think he's played so well last week. I think he can kind of come from behind. Scheffler, obviously, with the lead going in. Interesting thing. I mean, we haven't seen the Tour Championship with this much excitement since Shooter McGavin blew that lead late to Happy Gilmore. But the yellow jacket, of course. But it's fun. You know, they've tried to make it fun and they've done a decent job. Again, we're not used to watching guys start off with the lead like this, but it's a culmination. That's how this works. Yep. You get rewarded for the tournament you play and the points that you've achieved and where you are. And you have guys that have rebounded. Spieth barely cracks the top 30, but that's great. He got in. You know, it's a guy like watching Fowler, you know, relatively securely in around 21, somewhere like that, which is interesting to see. You know, Lucas Glover always makes me laugh because he's had a couple of incidents with his wife when he doesn't make the cut where she kind of has physically beaten him up and he's had to call the cops. Guy has won tournaments and has won like $18 million worth of tournaments over the year, but his wife, who happens to be gorgeous, by the way, has physically told him he sucked and has beaten him up. So it's just one of those things where he's in the top five. He's not a household name. If it wasn't for his wife beating him up, I wouldn't always remember Lucas Glover. But because his wife has done this a couple of times, it does stick out to me a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see how he does in this one.
Yeah, only because he went back-to-back, you know, you find out that he won six times, and then they bring up, oh, yeah, he won the 2009 Open at Bethpage.
He did.
Totally forgot about him winning an Open there.
And then and then he didn't make a cut, and his wife beat the shit out of him. It's just very I haven't seen that kind of beating since Chuck Finley got beat up by Tony Kitaen. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that you don't expect to see in professional sports, but here we are. Golf. Question for you, Evan, or Gino, both. Rory McIlroy's comments today about Phil. Did you guys hear what he said about how, because Phil's in trouble with some legal things about gambling? Rory said, well, he can bet on the Ryder Cup this year because he won't be there.
Wow.
Was it a little juvenile or do you think it was deserved? Because you are innocent until proven guilty. Is Rory still holding that grudge over the Liv Golf?
I think a lot of it goes back to Liv. I think Phil said some things about Rory leading up to during the whole separation there. And I think
Rory's been more outspoken than Phil. I mean, Rory's been much more of a prick about this than Phil has. Phil wasn't the only guy that took the money. That's why I say that.
But Phil, I think, you know, we've always heard the stories. Phil's always been a big time gambler.
No doubt.
Surprised it's that much if that book comes out and then that's really true. I mean, you're talking hundreds of million dollars in bets over the years. A little juvenile, yeah, but you know what? As long as you have some thick skin, deal with it.
No, I get it. G, your thoughts?
I thought it was a little juvenile, but I think Rory's still holding the grudge from all the Liv stuff, and he's ready to take a shot at any of those guys when he has a chance. So
I think he's willing to take a shot at Phil. I don't think he's willing to take a shot at any of those guys when he has a chance. I don't think he's saying crap to Brooks Koepka when he's walking by him. I don't think he's going to say a freaking word. I think he'll shut his mouth because Koepka will bury him. I think he'll talk to the old guy.
Maybe. Yeah,
Koepka looks like he could beat anybody up if he wanted to.
That's what I mean. I don't think he's going to make that same comment to Koepka.
I mean, the gun's on Koepka. Jeez.
Well, I mean, listen, Brooks Koepka is a big part of the reason for the merge back. He took the money because he thought his injury he would never come back from. Yeah, kind of understand what he was doing. Then when he realized he could still play, he was like, wait a second, I made a mistake.
Yeah.
He started putting pressure that he wanted to transfer back. They thought if he transferred back, other guys would, and then they worked on that merger. So Koepka was a big part of bringing it back. But nonetheless, I don't know if Rory is going to fight Koepka like he's going to fight Phil. Just my take on it. And by the way, the double standard, because we laugh our butts off about the stories about Jordan gambling. And when Phil's gambling, well, whoa, this is a little, what the hell? We love the Jordan stories. The one with Jeremy Roenick, where they play 18, and Roenick beats him, and then Jordan says, and Roenick thinks it's over because Bulls have a game that night, and Jordan says, let's play another 18. They pack on a bunch of Coors Lights. They play another 18, and Roenick beats him again. And Roenick says he's been drinking all day. He's been golfing all day. He's like, I'm gonna place money on the Cavs tonight. He goes, I'll tell you what. He goes, I guarantee you, I go for 40-15 and we cover tonight. And Jordan goes out there and scores over 50 and had 15 assists. And Roenick couldn't believe what Jordan did after that gamble. I just one of the funnier gambling stories straight from Jeremy Roenick's mouth. But I mean, that stuff we laugh about. The Phil stuff, no, it's a lot of money, a lot more than I thought it would be. We'll see if it's all true, but craziness. Just thought I'd bring that up to you boys.
And I'm taking John Rahm to win this thing.
All right, cool, G.
He's in the fourth spot. He's got four tour wins this year. He's got the most out of this whole group. I'm taking John Rahm.
Sounds good.
Kev?
I'm going to go Trollic here. I'm going to go Scheffler. I think he hangs on this year. He learned his lesson from last year.
He's got a good shot. I mean...
Well, he starts with a lead, so
but
he does have a good shot.
He had the same thing last year and didn't win, so.
Yep.
And Rory's still looming like he did last year. Rory, when he puts on a good round, could beat anybody.
Yep.
All right, Darren, what's going on in the world of college football?
All right, so we're going to do a little bit of college football talk in a couple of weeks, but the realignment is still in play. It looks like the ACC is getting closer to adding Stanford, Cal, and SMU. Now, the thing about it is, now Kev shakes his head. Do you know who the biggest impetus behind this has been with school? Notre Dame wants Stanford in the same league as them. Notre Dame is really? The one pushing Stanford. Now, at the same time, George W. Bush is pushing SMU, and Condoleezza Rice also pitching Stanford very hard. So you got political people, but Notre Dame is the one that initiated the talks because they not that they're in football, but they want Stanford to be in their league. It's a traditional rival they want to keep.
Wow.
I thought it was interesting. I thought that was interesting, but we'll see. So the thing about this is if that happens, then you have another coast-to-coast league. Fact is that the SEC is probably going to come in and take Virginia and North Carolina. And if they do, they're probably also going to take Clemson and Florida State. You assume that those four schools are going to end up in the SEC. Just the way it's going to sit down. We're going to have three major conferences of about 20 teams when it's all said and done. The ACC has to do something to kind of hold it together. I don't know if this does hold it together, but the one thing I'll say, SMU is a sleeping giant because it's Dallas. You have the Dallas market. You get to go into the heart of Big 12 country by taking a school in Dallas like that. It doesn't even matter, though, anymore because the Big 10 is already Rutgers and Maryland to Washington, Oregon, UCLA, and USC. You already have bi-coastal. This is not about student-athletes anymore. But it is it's hard for me to picture Stanford and Cal in the ACC, playing, women's softball, where they have to go visit Duke on like a Wednesday night. It just doesn't make sense for a two-game series. It just doesn't make sense for the student athlete, but it's all about money. Money has officially found its way to ruin college sport. That's where we are now with this. But I don't think the ACC feels like it has much of a choice but to do that.
Yeah, we brought it up a couple weeks ago, and my point then was, football is one thing. You've got about four or five road games a year. You travel out there on a Thursday night. You play Saturday. You fly home Saturday night. You're back Sunday, that type of thing. You're not affecting the student athlete as much. It's all these smaller sports. It's basketball. It's not that that's a small sport, but more of a regular playing, two, three games a week with basketball, playing much more often with baseball and all these other sports. how is this fair to the student athletes in those other sports?
The fact is, a lot of these other sports, Kev, are going to get canceled at some of these schools because they can't afford their travel. And they can't afford it if they're making $50 million a school for it, but they only care about the ones that make the money back, like football and basketball. The other sports don't mean anything to them. So when you see, listen, it's going to be a stupid thing I bring up here, guys, but like if you look at water polo, right? UCLA and USC have dominant water polo squads, right? Do you think anybody in the Big Ten is playing water polo? Do you think that sticks?
Oh,
are they
going
to have to find a new league? Are they going to have to find a new division to play? Is it going to be a separate they're going to have all sorts of inconsistencies because there are just sports that are regionalized. Yep. There are going to be some places like Rutgers and Maryland that play lacrosse. I don't know if Washington and Oregon play lacrosse. I don't know if they'll be part of it. I don't know how that all works out. I mean, there's going to be lots of weird things going on with college athletics, and the natural rivalries are not going to seem nearly as good as they once did.
And what does this do with, I'm thinking, looking ahead to basketball where, the Big East, most of those schools do not play Division I football or Division I A football. They're all basketball schools. Are you going to have this little niche, 10-team Big East? Can they compete? Are they going to get the TV contracts for basketball like these other conferences are, because of it's a lot of it just right in the coattails of football?
Well, that's the thing. Connecticut was the only school that plays football in the Division I level that's in the Big East, and they were out. They just went back because they could not compete in the other leagues that they were playing in. They weren't generating enough money where it mattered. So they got the Fox contract for the basketball, and it kind of worked itself out a little bit for them. It's you're not talking about the same amount. You're talking about, $50 million for a Big Ten or an SEC school, and you're talking about with the basketball contract, you're talking about, $2.5 million, stuff like that. But it's something for these guys that usually don't get anything for their basketball, $2.5-3 million, something like that. Like even now, the Pac-12, these schools left because they were making $34 million, or between $31 and $34 million, and the previous deal, this deal was going to be about $24 million. So they left to go get $50 million from somebody else, or $37 million from the Big 12 or whatever it is. And now what ends up happening is that the AAC, the American Athletic or the Mountain West, which gets $4 to $6 million, are the ones trying to recruit these other big Pac-12 schools. So these Pac-12 schools, like Washington State's already in debt by like $10 million, and they're going to go from making $24 million or $34 million, I should say, down to about $4 million when they go to the Mountain West. It's a totally different animal. And they've been in a major conference since 1917. Oregon State's been there since 1916. Gone. It just so Stanford and Cal. It's just gone. To me, Pac-12's only chance, or Pac-10's only chance, is if they went out aggressively and they went and got SMU, they went and got Memphis, they went and got Tulsa, San Diego State, Boise State, and UNLV, and took these six growing markets and made it part of their league. You probably won't get up to 24. You probably get somewhere around 15, but it'll be something. And then you invite Gonzaga and St. Mary's to join as a basketball-only school. That would be the only chance I think the Pac-12 would have. I just don't think they have the cachet right now to do it. Their only TV contract seems to be Apple offer them a streaming contract, and they don't have anything on the major network. So that's kind of where I see it right now.
Okay.
College football's a mess, G.
It is. I know, Darren, you wanted to put a punctuation mark on the Women's World Cup this past Sunday. We saw Spain beat England 1-0. Darren?
Olga Carmona, who scored the lone goal, lost her father. And right, she scored. Her father died the same day that she won the award. I mean, I don't know if there's ever going to be a more bittersweet moment. She didn't know about it until after the game, than winning the World Cup and losing your father at the same time. I just thought that was a little bit of a heartbreaking story. I mean, we've been polarized by the U.S. Women's National Team and all the things that either people loved or did not like about it. And one of the reasons why this country is so divided is, just the way that everybody reacts to the women's national team. Yeah. But Spain had an incredible run. Olga Carmona was a major part of this throughout the entire tournament. England also had a great run, so congrats to those girls as well. But simple fact of the matter is, I just thought it was a real bittersweet moment for that girl to be the hero 1 second and lose your dad another second just seemed like a lot. That's my, I don't know if you guys have any comments on that, but I guess not.
Okay. We'll slide over to baseball. Tonight, the Yankees ended their 9-game losing streak. They won tonight. They are 61-65. We heard from Cashman today, by the way, say that this is a disgrace. Well, no shit, it's a disgrace, Brian Cashman. We've only been screaming about you for 4 months. Anyway, do you guys have anything to touch on? We could talk about some of the teams, some of the playoff races. I got one thing I just want to call you guys to your attention. Mr. Acuña is at 28 home runs, 74 RBIs, and 58 stolen bases. A 30-60 season is 2 homers and 2 stolen bases away. And more crazy is a 40-70 season is only 12 home runs and 12 stolen bases. I know the games now are coming down to the wire. Atlanta has a huge lead. They're up 12 and a half games in the division. So you don't know how much Acuña is going to play, but these numbers are just ridiculous that we're seeing out of him right now. Guys, what are your thoughts on some baseball stuff? Darren?
A couple of points real quick. Number one, Shohei hits number 44, gets pulled from the mound today after 26 pitches because of arm fatigue. So someone's going to be paying this guy between $60 and $70 million next year. And in a playoff hunt, do you want the guy that's going to be paid as your ace to have to pull because of arm fatigue so you keep his bat in the lineup? Or does he hurt his arm and then he can't bat anymore? A lot of things to think about with Shohei. I mean, I know that the Angels don't care because they know he's gone. Trout's back, but this team has already fumbled it all away. They look as bad as the Yankees right now. They look as dead as the Yanks. But I thought that was a real head scratcher today when he's going through arm fatigue now. I mean, that's a red flag for a couple of teams that are going to have to spend a lot of money on him, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would say so, Kev.
The medicals are going to be interesting, you know, when they really look at those. If you're paying him that much, as long as he wants to keep doing the two-way thing, are you going to have to go back to his Japanese schedule where he pitches once a week? And say, I'm going to get 25 starts out of Shohei pitching him once a week rather than pitching him every fifth day and somehow carrying, you know, like a modified 6-man rotation is basically what you're going to have to do. Is going through that and juggling things around worth it to keep Otani on the mound? And I think it might be.
I got to be honest. I think Major League Baseball will be there, whether it's Shohei or not. I think we're really getting close to 6 and then eventually a 7-man rotation because that's what they're doing. They're babying all the pitches all the time now. We're going to see pitches that don't go more than 25 starts. That's where it's going to be. You know, you'll get the as the older guys start to come out of it, like Cole and stuff like that, and you know, Verlander kind of, you know, retires and Scherzer and stuff like that. You'll have less and Kershaw. You'll have less guys that will demand the ball every fifth day. I just think we're about seeing these guys getting more and more used to getting babied a little bit.
I mean, you know, looking at the Mets, you know, they've done – what's he pitch on the fifth day? About 3 or 4 times this year for Senga. Otherwise, they've tried to give him the extra day almost every time they can. And if they do make the play for Yamamoto –
mm-hmm.
Who Senga said he's more than willing to go recruit to come play for the Mets. Now you've got 2 Japanese pitchers who, again, are used to that once a week thing. You're going to probably, like you said, see the Mets looking at, you know, very seriously, if not a full 6-man, definitely like a 5.5-man rotation. You know, have that one swing guy.
I'd be stunned if it's not 6-man rotations around the league within the next 2 years. I really would be.
Yeah.
I just think that's the direction we're going.
We can't get enough good pitching to begin with. let's go to the six-man rotation.
Maybe with a six-man rotation, some of these pitchers can actually make it to the sixth inning because they're not they don't need to get out there every fifth day. Maybe that helps that point. We'll see.
Well, here's the only question. I mean, until they teach these guys how to pitch again, you're still going to have more injuries.
Yeah,
you can still have guys throwing out their arms left and right, east, west, north, and south. Listen, guys that we knew pitching back in the day did not get as injured. They didn't throw as hard either. But they threw 300 innings or 250 innings or a bad starter back then threw 200 innings, and it was they found a way to battle. Now these guys just throw as hard as you can for four innings and let's see how we do. That's where we are. That's what the sport is. That's what the sport is now.
Yep.
Meanwhile, you read. I mean, I think if when you look at Smoltz, Glavin, Maddux, rotation, they were throwing every day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Somehow, some way. Whether it be a soft toss, whether it be long toss, the real bullpen, they were throwing every day. And they would get into the games, and I don't think they were throwing max effort every pitch. Smoltz was not out there trying to.
They weren't being coached to throw max effort either.
Right.
I mean, that's part of it. You know what I mean?
They were pitching. They weren't throwing. There's a big difference.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, you get guys like Shane McClanahan, who's going for Tommy John now. He comes up, Tampa says, okay, I want to throw as hard as he can, as fast as he can for five innings, and then we'll figure out how to get through innings six to nine. Whereas when other guys were up, like the guys from the Braves, they were like, okay, listen, don't throw hard. Don't max out your effort because I want you to pitch eight innings, and we're going to try to get eight innings out of you. So you got to battle these guys and get through where now everybody's trying to throw as hard as they can. So,
I
always go back to 2009. I'm sorry, Kevin, I didn't mean to cut you off, where the Yankees beat the Angels finally in the playoff. And John Lackey, who we all know as a good but not great pitcher, fighting on that mound not to get pulled. And when he got pulled in the sixth, he was livid. How could you take this a game away from me? And it was like one of those things, and you're like, shit, I like John Lackey. I mean, this is a guy that wants the ball. These guys don't do that anymore. They know they pitch this way their entire careers, man. So they from college and high school on up, they know that they're going to go as far as they can until the speed drops off their pitches. I didn't mean to cut you off, Kev. Sorry about that.
I was going to say max effort. I mean, how much did it hurt DeGrom here throwing 102 every fastball, throwing his slider at 93 every time he threw a slider. I mean, with the way he threw the ball, sure it looked like he could have thrown 97 with no effort. How much would have saved his arm? How much fewer arm injuries would he have had dialing it back to 97? We don't know.
We'll never know. But Smoltz used to say he used to save it for when he needed it.
Yep.
And listen, there was something beautiful about that. I'm not saying that, listen, the games have changed. I could sit there and wax poetic and nostalgic about the way I like the game better. It doesn't matter. it's a different game now.
Let's take a look at the playoff races as we got it right now. So the American League, Baltimore, Minnesota, and Texas currently leading. Tampa Bay, Houston, and Seattle with the wild cards. Toronto right there, a game behind out of the wild cards. Boston's about four games back. Baltimore and Texas. Baltimore's up two games on Tampa Bay. Texas is only up a half game on Houston. Minnesota's up 4.5. So they're for the most part in there. Chances are Minnesota, Baltimore, Texas, Tampa Bay, and Houston are in. It looks like it's going to come down to Seattle, Toronto, but Seattle's gotten real hot. They're 8-2 their last 10. They're only a game behind Houston and Texas, so they're going to make that interesting. And Toronto's only a game out right now, so of the wild card. Any thoughts on the AL, guys?
Well, if you're the AL, if you're the networks, outside of Dallas and Houston, there's not one market that you're excited about that's going to make the playoffs. I mean, you're not excited about Seattle. You're not excited about Toronto. You're not excited about Minnesota. You're not excited about Tampa. You're not excited about Baltimore. You're just not. I mean, Baltimore has some nice players and a nice little story. Seattle's been the hottest team in baseball. 2 8-game winning streaks in the month of August. Julio Rodriguez set a legendary record last week for the amount of hits over a 4-game set. Total bases. Unbelievable what that kid was able to do. And he's a free agent in our league next year, just so we all know, in our fantasy league. There's nothing exciting. I mean, unless Boston makes this run, which the networks are praying for, and they're in a 4-4 game right now with Houston, there is nothing exciting because even though Dallas is a large market, the Texas Rangers are not a team that's a household name. Only the Astros stand out to you in the entire American League as a team you want to see.
Craziness. The three of us as baseball fans will be excited to see Baltimore.
Absolutely.
And all their young talent. But like you said, the average Joe out there was tuning in to watch playoff baseball. They're going to look Baltimore. Wow. I remember – last time I remember them, Jeffrey Meyer was interfering with the ball there.
Tony Tarasco looking up in disbelief. Okay, but unless they get a Texas-Houston final, I don't think – the AL Championship Series, I don't think they're going to be happy, the networks.
And Texas lost 6 in a row now, too. So they're really starting to be in trouble here.
Yeah, between those Texas losses and the Seattle wins, everything's really gotten bunched up and really close.
It's going to be a great race, and it's really going to be a great race for that division in the next month. So it'll be pretty cool.
Okay, over in the National League, Atlanta up big in the NL East. The Dodgers up big in the NL West. They basically have it almost locked up. Atlanta's up by 12.5. The Dodgers up by 11.5. Milwaukee's up 3.5 games right now over the Cubs and the Reds. And the wild card is just craziness in the NL right now. Before tonight's games, Philadelphia had 69 wins. The Cubs, Arizona, Cincinnati all had 66 wins. The Giants and the Marlins had 65 wins. It's like 5 teams for 2 spots, unless one of those teams gets hot and can catch Milwaukee, or Philly starts sputtering down the stretch here. It's gonna should be a little bit of a wild finish. Any comments on the NL, guys? Kev?
First thing, I hadn't looked in about 2 weeks. Also, I looked over the weekend and I said, "Shit, when did the Dodgers get up by double digits?" I remember that. It felt like 2 or 3 weeks ago that race was still pretty close. The Dodgers have just
and San Francisco's falling apart as well. San Francisco was the team in second.
They fell apart. Arizona hit the wall too.
Yep,
and that was it. In the Central, come on, Cubbies.
Kev picked the Cubs, so he's going to try to root them home all the way.
I'm trying to root them home. That would have been a.
He wants to brag.
That's right. And I think we all had the Braves in the East, shockingly.
Yeah. I had the Cardinals, so I did real well in the Central. I'm rooting for you, Kev, because I have no shot.
But, I mean, talk about the opposite of the American League. You know, we've got Atlanta, who's there every year, Philly, L.A. You know, if the Cubs get in with Chicago, you know, even the wild card, now you're talking big markets. You're talking teams that people want to see as opposed to the American League. I mean,
yeah, Cubs to join them, it's a big deal. It really is.
Yep.
I mean, that would be cool. But you have a lot of big markets in there. You know, San Francisco still in the hunt. Miami, not that it's a great baseball town, is still in the hunt. These are larger markets. Only Cincinnati. And I'd be excited to see Cincinnati get in, to be honest with you.
I want to watch that offense play.
What was that?
All of us would.
I just want to watch those kids play. That offense is fun. That's a fun squad to watch. They really are. By the way, we didn't mention Aaron Judge hit 3 homers tonight. First time in his career he did that in a game. Since they couldn't win at all, they figured, let's go. Aaron said, let me carry you, hit 3 homers and drive in 6. A grand slam and 2 solo shots. That team's just a wreck. So, Kev, thoughts on your Mets?
Glad to see them. Up until tonight, I would say, you know, at least they've been showing a little fight, a little spirit. You know, they've won a few games. You know, they're playing some other bad teams, but it's good to at least see them out there winning. You know, Nimmo's gotten back on track again. which sets the table. Lindor's, I mean, he's another guy. You know, 2 weeks ago, he was still in the 220s. He's now up over 250. He's been hot. Pete's been hitting a lot of home runs lately. McNeil's starting to hit. You know, he's getting his average on the way back up again. We know pitching-wise, Quintana didn't really do well tonight, but, you know, you're looking at, you know, it's tough when you've got, you know, one to two good starters out there with Senga and Quintana. The rest of the rotation, I mean, you've got no confidence at all in Pearson, McGill, and God, Carrasco can't leave this team soon enough.
McGill and Peterson have looked a little better the last couple times out. I know they're not playing.
They just don't go. God, it's four innings and they've thrown 84 pitches.
Pretty much.
It's frustrating. The only thing about tonight that really gets me is, you know, Morton shut them down. Seven innings, two hits, and he hit two more Mets. You know, this guy that broke Alonso's hand. Can we brush back? Can we drill somebody in the back? Yeah. I'm not saying go ahead head hunting. You know, Bickford gets in there. Can't Bickford drill Olsen in the back?
He should. He should be
I'm not advocating headhunting. I'm not saying go for the head. These guys have good enough control. Hit somebody. I mean, God, the Mets have been. We know the Mets are leading the league again and hit by pitch. Can some pitcher stand up for the hitters?
Do you want Buck back? Gino and I both want clean house for the Yankees. Do you want Buck back or Epler or both or neither? Everybody heard me and Gino go nuts.
Yeah, I heard you.
So we don't have to say ours anymore.
Everything points to Cohen bringing a new director of baseball operations. I know Stearns is going to be the big guy or the big name out there to bring in the Milwaukee guy. His contract's up finally. It seems like the job would be his if he wants it, so that Epler becomes more of the day-to-day, you know, GM.
But what do you want, Kev?
Kev, everybody can read. We want your opinion.
I know.
Even Gino and I can read, and we're dumb. What do you want? The questions only get harder.
I love Buck. I know he's manager of the year last year. If we're going with the youth movement and we're getting rid of the veterans, or at least some of the veterans, I think it's time to move on from Buck.
All right, Kev. It only took you 48 words to say what we wanted to hear in five. You know, it's not that I want to see it either way. You're a Met fan. I'm not. To me, you know, when you have a $300 million payroll and you don't do anything, you got to move on. To me, when you have a $200 million payroll, you don't do anything, you got to move on. The other thing about the Mets, there was a big rumor that they were that the Brewers tried real hard to get Alonso for the number two player in all of baseball. You know, I'm blanking on his name now. I'm sorry, you guys might know it. Who's the number two prospect in all of baseball? The Mets did not do the deal. If the Brewers do, if they do bring in this Brewer guy, I wonder what'll happen with that. I'm just curious your thoughts if you would trade Alonso or not.
It's got to be the God the Father offer. You know, I want to see Pete here for the rest of his career. The Mets have never had the homegrown hitter, except for David Wright. The Mets have never had that homegrown hitter play their whole year with them, with the exception of David Wright. And I think Pete
what about career? Not year. He meant career, not year.
What was that?
You meant career, not year.
Yeah, I meant career, yeah.
Okay, career, okay.
Because some guys have played the entire season with the Mets.
Yes. Thank you.
Listen, the one guy I point to, which I would tell him, would be Darryl, but I get it.
Well, Darryl had great years as a Dodger, though. That's what happened.
Darryl left?
Darryl left.
We let him go. We let him sign with the Dodgers. The Mets have had very poor track record bringing up hitters anyway. And
historically not their strength.
No. I mean, David Wright is probably the number one guy.
Yeah, he is. Not probably. He really is.
And Alonso is probably already number two.
Yeah, he's right there already. Another quick point for you guys. Wanda Franco impregnating a 14-year-old girl.
Is that what it would turn out to be?
That's what all the multiple girls, apparently. One of them being 14 is from what I understand.
Wow.
I saw you pick him up on the waiver wire, Kev. You know how he's going to help the program?
Oh, after I picked him up, Louis Polonia, I'm hiring him as manager. Trevor Bauer is going to be my ace. Wow, I didn't hear about
Yolanda freaking Franco. Can you date adults? Jesus Christ!
Can you?
You got more money than God. Can you date some adults, please? Jesus. Two other baseball points from me. White Sox finally fire Ken Williams. I mean, he's been there forever. He's done a crap job. I don't know how he keeps getting promoted through, and they fired Rick Hahn as the GM. And Dallas Keuchel with a little comeback. Had a perfect game into the seventh the other night for the Twins. Thought that was interesting. Haven't seen his name in a while. Came out of nowhere with his 81-mile-an-hour fastball and had a perfect game going into the seventh before giving it up. Those are my last baseball points. I don't know if you guys had anything else.
Nope, I had nothing.
Just two quick hockey points real quick, guys. The Rangers bring back Lafreniere. He resigned, and Austin Matthews now the highest paid player in hockey history with a 4-year extension with Toronto. I know how much you boys love the Maple Leafs, so I figured I'd bring that up. The Bahamas, for the first time ever, is qualified for a berth in the Paris Olympic qualifiers, so to speak. Not a country that usually makes it into the Olympics for basketball, but they did this time. So I thought that was really interesting. Georgia football. They lose running back Branson Robinson for the season towards ACL. It's Georgia, so they probably have six guys that can run the ball 4-3. But nonetheless, it's still a blow. And Michigan self-imposed a ban on Harbaugh for 3 games after the first original 4-game one was thrown out. And finally, tennis for me. Joker beat Alcaraz in Cincinnati and celebrated like he won something special. And they're coming up with the U.S. Open. Kev?
Oh, shit. The three-set match that lasted almost 4 hours.
7-6, 7-6 in the last two.
Yeah. Three
tennis
hours.
Is all about tiebreakers now.
3 hours and 45 minutes to play three sets.
To play a three-set match.
Wow. The fact that Joker's 36 and is 15 years older than this kid and can still go shot for shot with him is incredible.
You got to give him the nod, I mean, for playing this tight. I mean, the U.S. Open will be very interesting. Starts up here in New York next week. So, fun stuff going on.
Hopefully we do get that Joker Alcaraz final.
I hope to see it as well. And Reggie Chaney, who played for the University of Houston, who was on the Final Four team a couple years ago, passed away at 23. From last I heard, there was no cause of death given, but 23 years old seems way too young. Hopefully his family gets closure and stuff like that, but craziness. Crazy stuff. And Messi advanced to the final because they wanted to kick shootout tonight, so Miami advances after beating Cincinnati on penalty kicks.
But Messi did not score first time.
He did not score. So Kev, we're not going to brag about Messi putting the one in the back of the net for you.
Okay.
For your birthday, I'm buying you a Messi jersey in that pink and that Miami.
Oh yes,
pink.
Ooh, go Messi.
That's all I got, guys.
All right.
Yeah, I've got nothing else.
And nothing for you, G. Okay, great. Hey, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Gino, here with Kevin, talking about the wonderful, magical world of sports. Please download the podcast wherever you can get podcasts, whether it be an Apple product, iTunes, Tune Genie, Spotify, whatever you like. We're available everywhere. We put some stuff on Facebook from time to time. Please comment. Let us know your thoughts. Like it, disagree, don't disagree. We're going to be doing a lot of this stuff with college and pro football. You'll see a lot more posts going on. The Mets and the Yankees have been so horrible that I haven't posted enough because it's just been disgusting. So I have not done it a lot, but I will be doing much, much more of this type of stuff. Tune in, let us know your thoughts, and understand we have a football preview issue coming up in a couple of weeks, so you get an extra program there. We'll talk about college football as well and everything else you can think of. Gino, you have a quick point.
Kev, good luck coming back from parts unknown.
Georgie Animal Steel and Kev Ward, both parts unknown. So
I do have another point.
Yep.
God bless Terry Funk, who passed away today.
No.
The great Terry Funk. Yes. Terry
Funk. I haven't seen him since Roadhouse.
The age of 79, Terry Funk. Gone. He's a WWE Hall of Famer. So,
how about Dory Funk Jr.? He's still around?
He is. And without further ado, David.
May your sports be with you.